Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Doctrine Detox Podcast. This is episode number 29, and today I'm joined by Dave Carroll. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing very good, Adrian. How about yourself?
Hey, I'm doing just fine. Allergy season is really punching me in the face today, so if I sound different, that's why. Anyways, I met Dave through his wife, Penelope, who I did a lot of theater with. A wonderful person to work with, and Dave is wonderful as well. And I'm super excited to have him on the show today because he and his wife were telling me that he has a wonderful story about taking down a false faith healer. So if you're interested, stay tuned for that. So Dave, let's just jump right into this. Would you mind telling me a little bit about your religious background?
Sure. Well, Adrian, so thank you very much for having me on the show. I appreciate you doing this, and it's a great concept, and I think that it's very useful for a lot of people who are wondering where their faith is. To begin with, I should explain to you, I'm originally from Los Angeles, grew up in California, and was a third-generation Angelino, and both my grandmother and my mother were members of the church, which was known as the Church Foursquare, or the Foursquare Church. It's a Pentecostal arm that was originated in Los Angeles under the guise of a woman named Amy Simple McPherson. Basically, while there was much of it that was opposed as very progressive in that it empowered women to enter the ministry, my grandmother was given a divinity degree. Really, was a lot of really questionable practices in there, specifically with their involvement with the underworld in Los Angeles. And a lot of other things that, if you've ever watched a documentary of Amy Simple McPherson, would really tell you a lot. You can do your own story on that down the road if you haven't already. Mm. My mother was also a preacher. She was raised from the time she was a child to be a minister at her own radio show at 5 years of age, because that's what Angelus Temple in Los Angeles is all about. They basically were kind of on the forefront of televangelism. So they had a radio show. Amy Simple McPherson was broadcast on a worldwide basis because she was being translated over shortwave of the time. Very, very powerful organization. When I came along, the intention was that I was going to go into the ministry as well. Honestly, I was a true believer. I didn't question faith. It was a very, very real thing to me through all of my younger years of my childhood up until, you know, the questions began to arise in my teens. My mother was again, what I would call a true believer, though she was kind of part of the original Ministry of Wealth movement in the 70s and 80s that kind of originated under guys like Mike Murdoch in California. She was also the kind of person to believe very firmly in the fact. I mean, I sincerely never questioned her faith. But with that, she had kind of a belief that she was touched by God to be wealthy. And so she was the kind of person who was on the front top end of every MLM that you could imagine. She made a lot of money from that. She the Assembly of God, which is what we migrated to after the Foursquare Church, was also an evangelical church, spirit-filled, tongue-speaking. I felt it was very real when I was a young person. And so really there was a lot of belief that, you know, down the road, that's where I would go. In the 70s, my mom got very involved with the burgeoning television network that was in Orange County, California, called the Trinity Broadcasting Network. And it was a couple called Jan and Paul Crouch that had started that. They had spun off from the CBN Christian Broadcasting Network that had been Jim and Tammy Faye Baker. They had kind of spun off on that, left North Carolina, came to California, started their own thing, started out in a garage, got a group of believers and investors, and they built it into a worldwide television network. My mom was one of those people who were initially involved from the very, very beginning when she was one of the first people on the phones, banning the phones for this group of people. And like I said, they grew into a massive worldwide enterprise. It's still on there. The Trinity Broadcasting Network is one of the most powerful televangelical arms in the world. Well, growing up in that, I didn't give it a lot of thought. I was friends very close with Matt and Paul Crouch Jr. Levers were their kids. We were all about the same age. We grew up playing out there in the, at the television studio, and you just began to see the wealth that was kind of circulating there. You began to understand that if you started paying attention, what kind of money was rolling into these organizations. They had places that were like count rooms, like Las Vegas, where mail bags would come in by the dozens and opened up and torn out, and checks and cash and so much money. And as little kids, we weren't suspected of anything. You'd see these things, and again, in their own mind, it was kind of like it's a blessing, but you could see how much money was involved in this. And I started asking questions about why so much money was coming in to these these TV stations. I mean, you know, and every time you watch these channels, it was always in another emergency, like, you know, a crisis where they wanted to get missionaries to, or they were going to have a little TV station that they were going to buy, and they're going to lose a license if they didn't do this. So there's constantly another crisis after crisis that was happening. I'm going, God, they're always asking for money. It's really fascinating to me to watch this. So we were also, again, a part of a local congregation, and this is in the town of Bellflower, California. And one of those kind of catalyst moments came in June 20th, 1979, when my mother was, she still had her own business. She was an insurance agent and a real estate person. Well, she was on an insurance call waiting for a client outside of a restaurant when a man stuck a gun inside of her car, put a gun in her face, and said, I'm taking your car and your cash, and I need it, and I'm taking yours. Mom was going to give it to him, and well, it. One thing led to another. He decided that it was not just going to be about robbery. It was going to be about rape. And so he raped her, brutalized her, left her for dead in her car. My mom is a person of faith. My mom, when we later heard her testimony in court, she prayed for this kid. She's trying everything she can to convince him that this is the wrong thing to do. You know. But my mom also appreciated her wealth. She had diamonds and she had furs and she was in a Cadillac and she exuded wealth. And he saw this. And even though she was, you know, doing what the kid should pray for him, whatever, he felt both guilt but anger at her. And in the end, when he was done with her, like I said, he threw her in her trunk and left her for dead. Fortunately, after hours of calling and hearing people going by and nobody reacting to it, a couple kind of rescued her. And we didn't know what was going on to my mom. It was a Wednesday night when we normally go to church. She hadn't come home yet. We thought, well, she got hung up with the client. And it was when we were at church that we discovered what happened to her. So, of course, you know, we rush to the hospital and everything that goes through that. And my mom is just my mom. She's trying to be resilient. But, you know, even after DNCs and her face is beaten to a pulp and she's bruised and battered and she went through years of medical issues, you know, female issues as a result of the brutality of her rape. She never gave up her positive spirit. My mom was the kind of person that should be a testimony if that's what you are, if you're a testimony-driven faith, and that's what ours was. And she took a little time to get out of church because the church insisted she take some time. Mom was involved in our local choir. She also taught the youth group. She also had a Thursday service that she did out of El Toro Marine Base where every Thursday she went out and spoke to these young Marines who maybe not had a family connection, and this is during the Vietnam era, so she was very popular, and she brought a lot of those kids every Sunday to our local church. Well, as things kind of, she came back to church, you know, and she'd been in the choir, and she'd been in, and they said, hey, Sharon, maybe you should take some time off. Relax, you know, just take it easy. But all she wanted to do was serve. But bit by bit, they started taking her away with responsibilities, and her preacher basically kind of confessed, and from the pulpit, he started talking about those who are people who walk with sin draw things that happened to them. And it was pretty obvious that he was talking about my mom.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, he stripped her. They stripped her of her youth service. They stripped her of the choir. I was involved in the Assembly of God's version of the Royal Rangers. It's called Boy Scouts program. It's called Royal Rangers. I was kind of like equivalent to an Eagle Scout. I was asked to not be a part of things anymore because kids are looking at me funny because of what happened to my mom. So they're blaming the victim. Well, what's happening? Well, I've always been a very vocal and active person, and I didn't understand why people would do this, and I didn't understand why they were distancing her. They contacted the church organization to inquire how someone could just strip of this, and, you know, they wouldn't do anything about it. So that was a beginning down a path. I started to try to continue to believe, but it became to get harder and harder and harder. Mom put more of her energy into the televangelical work, but again, I started asking a lot of questions. All this money and these attitudes and lies that are obviously from the pulpit. How do people of faith get away with this? And so I think this happens to a lot of people who decide to leave the faith as they start to ask a lot of questions. And these questions weren't the answers that I think that maybe people say, it's God's will. I just felt there was something wrong with that. So this continued all the way through high school, and I went in the Marine Corps, and I just, as I started to spend more time getting involved in my adult life, I just began to get a lot of doubts. And so while I hadn't necessarily moved into an atheism, I guess I was kind of on the road to an agnosticism. So I kept asking myself, how can a God let something, specifically someone who was such a loyal servant of his, be so terribly treated by the system, by the people who she's done nothing but good for? And that's what kind of began the process for me, is wondering if God sincerely believes, and he says there, very good, well done, thy good and faithful servant. Why is he allowing here to be persecuted? So, of course, the stories of Job, trying to find the justification. But as all this was going on, I began to realize, I don't think that the ministry is where I wanted to go. I don't think that's what I wanted to do. Well, that's all Mom wanted me to do, was that. And that began to create a lot of rift in our family as well. So it kind of created a strain in the family when they realized that wasn't going to be the path that I was going to take. Military was probably going to be a path I'd take, but you know, there are other interests. But specifically, the more I got away from this environment, the more questions that I had, the more I started to doubt. And when I was in the Marine Corps Reserves and I began my career in radio and in media, I became aware of something called the skeptical movement.
Ah, yes.
So you might be familiar with the groups from the Committee for the Scientific Investigation of the Claims of the Paranormal.
Yes.
I began to read their magazine, Skeptical Inquirer, where I worked. A guy introduced me to this world. He talked about the Southern California skeptics and all the things that were going on with the skeptical movement and other people who had doubts. And then so as I got involved and started inquiring and finding things that were happening, I realized that, you know, while their initial thing that they had been set up for was to investigate claims of the paranormal, i.e. spaceships, paranormal phenomenon, Bigfoot, religion was a big deal with that. And some of the same questions that they were asking were the same questions that I had.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, as a lot of people don't initially understand, when you start going through this movement of moving away from religion, you think you're all alone. You think that you're weird. There's something happened to you. But then all of a sudden I found that there was a community out there of a lot of people who came from faith traditions who all of a sudden realized that maybe what I was taught from childhood to believe, maybe that's not so accurate.
And that's why I'm here.
So you probably had a similar path, right?
Very much so, yes.
So that, you know, that began in the mid-80s, and like I said, I realized that there was a lot of interest specifically in the world of faith healing. There were a lot of people out there who had been making claims that they were healing people. This is pre-Benny Hinn. This is actually going back to, in this situation, what we're talking about, you know, that we'll get into later, is Peter Popoff. But all these people making claims that they were healing through themselves, the faith healer power. Now it's thrown up around faith healers. I mean, the Assembly of God, if you have any understanding about the history of that, started out with carny folk way back in the 1850s and 60s who found another use for their tents. And, you know, and this is just part of their tradition. So faith healers have been part of my life. And, you know, I've always been healthy. I've never been sick, but I was fascinated by the story too. And all the people come up and someone was coming up and saying they had cancer and all of a sudden they're magically healed. And they, you know, they came in a wheelchair and all of a sudden they could stand up. Miraculous stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, as you start talking to people, you discover, well, yeah, but are they really crippled? Do they really need that wheelchair? You know, what's the story behind that? And that was one of those questions was being asked. Well, the guy in the early 80s who was really asking that question was a guy named The Amazing Randy. Are you familiar with The Amazing Randy?
I am very familiar with The Amazing Randy, yes. He's one of my intellectual influences.
There you go. So, same thing. I found him fascinating. He was basically explaining and reading the Skeptical Inquirer about how these claims, especially in some of these places like the Philippines, where they're actually doing physical manifestations of disease, i.e. they would pray on someone's stomach, they would talk about it, all of a sudden in their hand, they'd be holding poison. Well, he was, you know, or cancer. And they explained the whole prestidigitation aspect of it and basically the con. Well, the thing that you understand when you start working around televangelists is that the persona on the screen is not the persona off screen.
Yes.
They are very influential speakers and very convincing, but you realize that there's a lot of trappings associated. These people like their wealth, they like their power, and they like to hang around and be treated as if they're something very, very special. And, you know, again, my mom, while I will always ascribe her to being a true believer, you know, she also profited very handsomely off of her faith. She trafficked with people who were very wealthy with respect to the usage of their faith. When you're looking at the fact that, you know, the folks who had started out a TV broadcast on their garage in a little, you know, Orange County town, now had a $12 million estate, you know, in Anaheim, California, or in the Anaheim Hills. You know, it tells you that, well, there's something to this. It's just a little bit disconcerting, and especially the fact that the people who are giving to them are the people who are most desperate, the people who need it. They need something to happen in their life. And, you know, the sad part about it is that if they were being healed, well, maybe it was worth it. But then you're finding out a lot of these people who are truly sick put a lot of faith in it, and they were dying. And so I just became curious about that. So, you know, when I saw an opportunity to kind of investigate this further, you know, I decided, well, let's see what I can do. And so I decided to go ahead and volunteer to do what I could to kind of maybe help expose this, because this is a mission for the Amazing Randy and something that he wanted to do. And he was one of the few people in this movement, an avowed atheist, who had an international audience that would listen to him. And with his million-dollar challenge that no one had ever been able to ever claim by having a demonstrated act of paranormal phenomena, and it had never been challenged, I said, well, you know, that's a brave man. So that's where I kind of moved into that realm. There was as I got involved with the skeptical group, I'd learned that the Amazing Randy had put together a team of people who were investigating faith healers, and specifically they had an interest in a guy named Peter Popoff. Peter Popoff was a faith healer, and he had made a lot of money telling people that he can cure illness. Mm-hmm. And as a televangelist, he had people coming up on stage, you know, walking magically. You know, he had an amazing ability to determine exactly where people were in a 10 or 12,000 seat arena of a specific illness and disease. And it was amazing. If you looked at it, wow, he must really be guided by God. But people like the Amazing Randy, who are masters of illusion, said, we think there's something a little bit different to that.
Yes.
So he put together a team of folks who were specifically communications experts, surveillance people, and what they did is that they started camping outside of his shows using scanners and checking available spectrum, and by gum if they didn't realize that, yes, indeed, there was actual broadcasts that were going between a woman and the preacher who was feeding him specific information. And so they wanted to have the ability to prove this. So they had put together a series of visits and investigations into various services where they would go into a gathering. Sometimes it was a tent arena, sometimes it was an arena. And in the situation that I actually had a chance to participate and understand, I had a tiny, tiny, tiny little role, nothing major in it, basically an observer.
Right.
To listen to what people were saying and trying to figure out what the angle was. And what they discovered, what the angle was, it was pretty innovative in that when you come walking into the door, they'd usually hand you a little card to write down a prayer request if you want to have something for the minister to, or prayer for them to consider. And there are people who were planted who worked for the minister's organization who would search around and look for people whom they had a type of person they knew they were looking for. And quite often they pose as ushers. Quite often they pose as just another person in the crowd. Sit down, engage that person in conversation, and they would gather information from that person as they're filling out the card. Like they said, oh, I'm really concerned because I was just diagnosed with cancer, I'm concerned. And this person, if they saw a compelling story, would take that information and give that to somebody else, who in turn would feed that to backstage, which would in turn go to the woman who was at the microphone, which turned out to be the minister's wife, and she would in turn use this earpiece that Peter Popoff had in his ear, and she would guide him to specific people, and she would give them their backstory and their cards, because her spotters not only had a prayer request, but they could say the lady in the blue dress, white hat, kind of skinny and pale towards the back corner, and then they would create a story, and it would like an amazing story, you know, of either he would go to them or draw them to them or guide people to them and tell them something specific to their specific need. And, you know, I had a chance to observe these activities, watching what people were doing, listening to stories. The group had other people who were much more experienced investigators writing down their own prayer requests. One guy who was part of the group had actually come in a wheelchair, saying that he needed to you know, he was crippled and he was looking for the thing for healing. And by gum, if they didn't call him up, that he was magically pulled to this person because he had a need in his spinal column. And all this information was gathered up. And the amazing Randy, who had, like I said, had an international audience, but specifically he was specifically a fascination to Johnny Carson. And he presented this information to Johnny Carson, who in turn presented this to Peter Popoff about all this fraud. Well, while it brought down his ministry and led to, was the inspiration for a great story of a movie that Steve Martin did a few years later called Leap of Faith, you would think that with the revelation of the con that he's pulling, that his career would be over with. But far from that. In a couple of years, they reinvent themselves, ask for forgiveness, and find a new group of people to glom on. And if you look right now, Peter Popoff is back out there again.
Yep.
Doing exactly the same thing.
Yep. His current net worth is over $10 million here in 2021, even after being scammed, or after being proven as a scam.
And so this is part of the process, is that there are very nice people who need something special in their life. They need someone to care, and they're played upon. And the sad part about it is that, you know, these kind of cons have been, you know, part of human culture forever, but it's most pernicious when it's in religion. And so I had a chance to take part in just a small piece of watching a much bigger thing unfold. But what most amazes me is not just the takedown, but this ability for people to reinvent themselves. I mean, there are Jimmy Swaggart, all these other, Rex Humbard had made mistakes. There are a series of people who had been exposed for frauds or their own corrupt beliefs, and you think it would topple them, but because the cornerstone of their ability is faith, they get away with it.
Yep.
And they have a chance to reinvent themselves and bring themselves back. The rare example of that was when you look at the collapse of the Christian Broadcasting Network with Jim and Tammy Faye Baker. And all the fraud that was exposed. Jim went to prison for it.
Yep.
Jim is back in the ministry again. Tammy has her own ministry for years. It's because they play upon people's faith. They prey upon that. And so that has been something that has just been a driving force for me for decades, is that, you know, through various phases of my life, I've been both angry and sympathetic, and it carries itself over because those same kind of tactics that have been used by televangelists, and which is pure con artistry and flim flam and bunk, has just been recently used politically, and it's still being used politically. And because people have a need to believe, and while I don't ever want to step on anyone's belief, and certainly, you know, their need for faith, invariably in people's lowest moments, they need someone who is going to give them something to help them get over this moment and believe that there's something worth living for. And it's at these times that when someone can deliver to them any kind of whatever special words they need, and words that are re-manipulated over and over and over again, it brings them back down to the situation to where they buy into it, they believe, because it fills an empty spot in their soul. So, you know, I don't think we'll ever be able to, you know, will people ever stop believing? No, of course not. You know, all you can do is hope that in time people can kind of get an opportunity to see that maybe, you know, maybe your vulnerabilities are being preyed upon.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of what, you know, where I kind of began my pathway. So I've spent, you know, since that time pretty much not necessarily trying to serve a purpose of a debunker, but so much when I have an opportunity to have someone to talk to about this, trying to understand where the vulnerabilities of their lives are. The thing is, as I've told people when I worked in radio a long time ago, and I did talk radio, you know, I'm not trying to change your mind. I'm trying to change your perspective.
Mm.
And by having a chance to see things from a different point of view, maybe not only can you understand where people are, but maybe you have a chance to take them where they need to go, if you kind of understand where they are at this point. And that's kind of, you know, I think the most important thing that people who are in this path that you and I have been on for a while now, of self-discovery, of trying to understand the programming that brought us into faith, and the real world circumstances that bring us out of those traditions. It's not because we're rejecting something so much as we're opening ourselves up to something different.
Absolutely. Wow. Honestly, so the James Randi Peter Popoff story is probably one of my favorite stories of recent history ever. And for you to have served a part in it, even if it was a small one, makes you some kind of pseudo celebrity in my mind. So congratulations for that.
Well, thanks, man. Like I said, the fun thing about it was I played no role of significance other than really to be, because there were dozens of volunteers who were at each of these services to observe. We wanted to watch. But the sad part about it is that when you see how people are being preyed upon and how it's just a joke, and if you're a fan of this and you've heard those recordings, how they mock them,
mm-hmm.
You treat them as simpletons because they brought their hearts into the room. And they need an answer. And they're looking to the person on stage to really be a connection to a God they sincerely want to be connected to, but they don't feel they have the capability to reach out to.
Yeah.
And the fact that that's used against them is just heartbreaking.
Absolutely. I don't have a story so impactful as yours in that you collaborated with James Randi in taking down Popoff. However, there is a local faith healer in my hometown who I won't mention by name, but I've told this story a couple of times previously on this show, but I've had four friends who have approached her or her team asking for healing. And they received that healing for a moment. It was you know, placebos or what have you. And then the healing went away. When they went home or a couple of days later, they realized, oh, I still have this ailment. And then over time, they convinced themselves that it was because God didn't see them as favorable, that they were still evil in God's eyes. Similar to, I guess, what your mom's church did to her. You know, I am sinful, so I must have attracted this thing. And over the course of a couple of years, all four of them took their own lives. So, it's a terrible business that the faith healers are in. Not only are people being preyed upon financially and spiritually, but there are lives at stake. And to be in the business of taking someone down like that or exposing their fraud like that, I wish I could say would be fruitful, but like you said, Popoff and Jim Baker and these people who have been exposed are back again because one of the core tenets of Christianity, particularly the health and wealth part of Christianity, is you have to forgive everyone all the time immediately. So you can commit as many atrocities as you'd like, and you can keep raking in the dough.
Redemption is an important cornerstone, especially of the evangelical tradition.
Yeah.
It doesn't teach you to be skeptical. What it teaches you is to be forgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you tell people not to forgive people?
Right, exactly.
How do you tell them? You know, and when you realize that the level of flim-flam, and again, this is just being reinterpreted in the Christian church, but this is ancient. This has been going on since societies got together, and there have been people preying upon the innocence and the need for others to know. It's just a lack of conscience. And I think that the sad part about it is that I think that there are very good people generally committed to truly believing things that they think will bring them into heaven. I honestly believe that there are many ministers that enter the faith with that intention.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that people realize that it's a business. It doesn't matter what denomination you belong to, whether you're non-denominational or Christian or whatever, or if you are going to rise up in the organization, and you need to understand that this is a business. And as such, you are fiscally responsible to do what you can to generate money for your organization. This is why we could not bring down this minister. Not only did we later discover that the things that he said about my mom, well, quite frankly, he'd been trying for a long time to develop a personal relationship with my mom that was kind of outside of the scope of her thinking. But this man had been a serial sexual abuser. And only later on, when someone was able to actually bring a criminal case against him, did they remove him from the church. But it really came down to the earnest thing with the Assembly of God Church that as long as people were earning money and they hadn't committed a crime, they were going to give them ample room to do whatever it is they needed to do.
Wow.
So It's just the nature of denominations. I spent this last weekend with a friend of mine. He's a retired Army chaplain. He retired as a colonel. And we spent a lot, which is really interesting because, you know, one of my closest friends is also a guy of deep, deep committed faith. But he and I, and you can imagine our conversations this weekend. But I think fundamental to it, we got to talking about these issues of forgiveness and the need for people to connect to something that makes them feel like it's all worth living for. Mm-hmm. And while, you know, faith is an incredibly important and powerful thing, I was kind of astounded when we were talking, and I said, well, you know, you being a former Army chaplain, I mean, you're in an enclosed community with a strong faith tradition. And as he admitted to me at that time, he said, nah, Dave, he goes, the funny thing about it is, we're like everybody else. You know, yes, 20, 30 years ago, you can count that almost everybody that was in the military belonged to some sort of faith tradition. But now it's less than 60% and shrinking.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's interesting that, you know, he and I talking about this and talking about the issues that they have. And we spent our time talking about doubting promises and the important role that they play in Christian faith and the Christian tradition. He just said, you know, that's the thing. He goes, even though you don't believe, and even though you don't know how to define it, he goes, you serve an important role to people like me because I understand where you came from. Mm-hmm. And I understand who you are. And I understand that so many other people are heading in that direction. And we may not be able to pull them back, not because of those of us who sincerely believe, but because we're, if not outnumbered, we're outvoiced by those who see this as nothing more than an opportunity.
Right.
And that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. It's a hard battle.
One of my favorite anecdotes, and I'm not quite sure where it comes from, but there was a Bible study that was happening, and someone asked the leader of the study, why did God create atheists? And the leader of the study said, well, atheists are important to teach us selflessness, because in the world there are truly good and wonderful people who are atheists, very good, kind-hearted people who have no real ulterior motives, and they look at people and they don't say God will help you. They say I will help you because I can actually do something. And I thought that was really beautiful.
I agree. Completely agree.
Yeah, I'm not saying that, you know, atheists are the best people in the world, because there are some truly insufferable ones out there. But but that's the case of any belief system or any demographic ever. So all that to say,
not that there was ever a Garden of Gethsemane moment specifically, but you know, I did struggle for a long time of wanting to believe that it was true, but not seeing it because of the manifestation, the talking of the doubting Thomases. I did have the challenge of saying, if you're real, show me. And you can't challenge God, supposed to say he's not going to respond to that, but I've always said I'm going to leave myself open to it. I said, I want something tangible to demonstrate to me that you're real. And if you do, I'll believe you, and I'll fight for you, and I'll speak for you. Well, you know, that challenge was laid down 35, 36 years ago. And I've never received an answer because, you see, it's got to be pretty clear for me. But I've always said I'm open to the side. So, hey, if there's a God out there and if he feels that I can be of any service to him, then all he has to do is make himself manifest. Now, people say, that's pretty arrogant of you expecting God to do it. Well, if God is omniscient and omnipotent, he has the capability. And if I matter that much, just like he did with Paul on the road to Tarsus, he can do what he needs to do and what he wants to do in order to get the people on board. But in the same instance, maybe we'll see people say, well, what is the purpose of atheists or agnostic? Well, maybe our thing is to maybe kind of suggest the fact that maybe God already gave you the answer. He gave you a big brain. He gave you the ability to ask a lot of questions. He gave you the ability to not have to wonder. You know, beautiful thing about technology today is that if you're really interested in any one topic, you can find it out there. You can find it from qualified resources. You can find people who've been in the same place that you are and ask them questions and say, and as you're in this questing moment of your life, but most of all, don't feel you're alone. Mm. The hardest part about walking away from any faith tradition, be it Christianity, Islam, and you know, I've talked to Islamic friends or former Islamic friends, who again suffered the same thing, because quite often that becomes a losing family, is that you got to be honest and truthful with yourself. And if you can't believe something for whatever reason, then you got to give over to the fact that maybe there's a reason why you feel that way.
Yeah.
And to put it in a bigger picture, Maybe there's a reason. Maybe God's purpose for you is to ask questions and not accept pat answers and to seek out real answers. Because, you know, Scully said it, the truth is out there. You know, it's just a matter of looking for it. Or, I'm sorry, that would be Mulder. The truth is out there. You know, the fact is that, you know, if we really want to find answers, then we keep questioning, because that's what makes us a unique species. Unlike all of our fellow Earthling friends, you know, we have the ability to keep asking questions and not be satisfied with the answer. And, you know, maybe that's God's gift to us, because we keep asking questions.
Yeah, absolutely. That is excellent. And honestly, that seems to be the theme of this show. I should change it from the Doctrine Detox podcast to keep asking questions or something like that, because every time I ask someone who has fully deconverted from being like fully in the church to now being whether fully atheist or fully agnostic or whatever, is the same theme applies, is keep asking questions. And I love that. Just keep being inquisitive. Keep wondering about the world. I once attended a Bible study in New York City, and I asked questions like, if God is omniscient, can he see who goes to heaven and who goes to hell? And if he already knows, then does that mean he plays favorites? And how do I know that I'm one of God's favorites? And blah, 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 blah. A bunch of questions that those people who did not have any kind of like biblical degree or anything did not know the answers to. And I eventually asked them, well, am I sinful for asking these questions? And the short answer that they gave me was, yes, you just need to let God handle you. So there is nothing wrong with believing in Christianity or Islam or whatever religion you subscribe to, but continue to be inquisitive. Keep asking questions. Keep seeking knowledge. And do not give money to a televangelist.
They got plenty. They're good.
They have plenty of money already. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time here on the show here, Dave. Do you have any projects or anything that you would like my listeners to find out about?
Well, hey, if you are interested in, I actually spend my time not so much working on atheism, but I'm a bit of a pirate guy. So you are welcome to go to our Facebook page, ThatcherTheBook.com, or Pamlico and Albemarle Publishing, either Facebook page, which will take you to our other pages. PamlicoandAlbemarle.com also is our publishing company, where we have a three-volume works of Blackbeard the Pirate called Thatcher, the Unauthorized Biography of Blackbeard the Pirate. And we're presently editing our work called This Day in Pirate History. It is a compendium of everything that has happened in piracy on any day of the calendar, and we'll have that book out here at the end of the year.
And Dave and his wife Penn are doing fantastic work. I've read one of the Thatcher books. It's wonderful, very well put together. Highly recommend. I'll leave links to all of that in the show notes. And don't forget that you can follow me on social media as well, on Twitter at Doctrine Detox and Instagram at Doctrine Detox Pod. I'm also newly on Reddit, r/Doctrine Detox. And if you want to support the show, you can for free just by leaving a like or a 5-star review wherever you're listening right now. Or if you want to support me more directly, you can through Patreon at patreon.com/Doctrine Detox Pod. Plans start at just $1 a month, and for $3 or more, you can get access to cool perks like episodes a day early and Ask Me Anything posts, or you can ask me anything under the sun. Doesn't have to be about religion, and I will answer to the best of my abilities. Thank you so much, Dave, for being on this show and sharing your story. I was gripped from the beginning, so thank you so much for that.
So my pleasure, Adrian.
Of course. And thank you, folks, for listening. And never, ever forget that everything is going to be okay.
The Doctrine Detox podcast is written, recorded, and produced by Adrian Cardwell. Special thanks to this week's guest, Dave Carroll. Original intro and outro music is Doctrine Detox by Adrian Cardwell.